Hey y'all, welcome back to New Slang. I'm Thomas Mooney, and I hope you all had a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Like anyone, I do love a good four-day week, but yeah, missing the Monday just kind of throws me off for the rest of the week, and I feel like I'm always just playing catch-up. At any rate, though, we are wrapping up today with the second part of our Marathon Songwriters two-part series. As a refresher, last weekend I was down in Marathon for the Marathon Songwriters Festival, and I sat down with the songwriters who were playing, and we talked about West Texas and songs and West Texas songs. The previous episode was with Courtney Patton, Walt Wilkins, and Drew Kennedy, and this one right here is with Josh Grider and Kelly McQuee. We were going to also have Bobby Hamrick, who also played the festival, but we just didn't end up getting it done. We tried to get a phone conversation set up, but it just never worked out. But I do encourage you, go check them out as well. Today's presenting partner is our pals over at Desert Door Texas Sultal. If you've been listening to New Slang for really any amount of time, you'll know that Desert Door is one of my all-time favorite premium, high-quality spirits. If you haven't or aren't sure what exactly a Sultal is, I'm going to let you in on a little secret that's going to up the game on your liquor cabinet. For starters, the best reference point that I can point you to is to think about a tequila or a mezcal. Do you feel that Western Desert, that Texas ruggedness? Okay, Sultal is like that, but a little bit more refined, smooth, and fragrant. It intrigues the palate and offers these hints of vanilla and citrus. There's an earthiness that often sends me right back to my Trans-Pecos and Far West Texas roots. There's plenty to love about Desert Door. For me, it all starts right there. A close second is just how versatile Desert Door really is. You can go full highbrow and experiment with concocting a variety of cocktails that call for muddling fresh fruit, sprigs of thyme, sticks of cinnamon. It's perfect for that world. If you're a little bit more down home, if you've just rolled up the sleeves of your denim Wrangler button up, it's perfect for that as well. If you're just desiring something that's short and sweet, it hits the mark every time. Desert Door is genuine and authentically West Texan. It's inherently West Texan. They harvest Sultal plants out in the wild and are knowledgeable conservationists at heart. That's obviously something incredibly important to me. They shine a light on what makes West Texas special and unique and worth preserving and keeping it safe from exploitation. Right now, you can find Desert Door all over Texas, Colorado, Tennessee, and there's budding numbers in places like New Mexico, Arizona, California, and Georgia. Best thing you can do is to check out DesertDoor.com to find where Desert Door is locally. Again, that's DesertDoor.com. If this is your first time listening to New Slang, go ahead and hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, go follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And if you've been following along for a minute, you'll know that I have a new book coming out later this month. It's my debut book, and it's called The Lubbock Way. It's a collection of stories and thoughts and observations about the Lubbock music scene, specifically from around 2015 to 2017. I know it feels like I'm covering just a very, very brief period of time, but I feel like it's a very important one. And really, even though it's a very brief period, it's a microcosm for what's been happening here in Lubbock and the South Plains in general for, well, since the beginning. Right now, you can go and pre-order The Lubbock Way over in the New Slang merch store. And of course, I just did add some new merch over into the merch store. It's these cream-colored Bust the Hub Lubbock County ones. They've been selling pretty well, so yeah, go get one before they're all sold out. All the links that I just mentioned, they will be in the show notes as well, which let's get on into the conversations. Here is Josh Grider and Kelly McQuee.
Well, Thomas, if you have to know, it's Chardonnay.
Chardonnay. See, I'm not even...
It's a Chardonnay.
Not even... Okay.
Hey, listen. So during the pandemic, I found that if I started drinking Chardonnay at like noon, it felt I had less guilt than if I started drinking whiskey at noon. It's just light. It was easy. And I loved it. And it turns out I thought it was like a COVID fling, but it's turned into, I think it's lasting. So I go for an afternoon Chardonnay now and again.
Yeah. I felt less guilty about drinking earlier in the day during COVID too. If I was having some purple drink, just some.
Yeah, sure. Everybody cut this. Man, we all built all kinds of excuses and reasons and justifications during the pandemic.
Yeah. We are out here in West Texas.
We are out here in West Texas.
You are originally from Mexico, which is like further West Texas. So this is like, you know, home away from home. You in a lot of ways, in a lot of senses.
No, the landscape and the arid climate and the way it cools down at night, and you can wake up and it's brisk and cool in the morning, even in the middle of the summertime. And shade actually works. You can get in the shade and actually cool off, as opposed to, you know, further east where it's just so humid and just gross this time of year. So even though the temperature can get high, the nights cool off and it's dry. And yes, it very much feels like home, climate wise.
Yeah. What here. Is there like a, do you have any like a favorite memory or what do you kind of like think about when you're driving out here that you kind of go, oh, I remember that, and I hope to find that magic again or something.
Man, as soon as I get west, it's all just those memories of home and riding four-wheelers in the desert and shooting rabbits and just goofing off, because especially out in New Mexico, my cousins lived on a farm in Deming, which is just west of Cruces, and I spent a lot of time there doing all the shooting guns and the country living kind of stuff, you know, and then, you know, growing up in Cruces, there's so much government land. Like you could get a case of shotgun shells and a case of skeet and drive 5 minutes out of town and just shoot skeet, do whatever, you know, because it's all public land. Like you can just go out and use it. And that was a big shock for me when I moved to Texas. So every time I start heading west, you get those, man, let's get some Coors Light and some shotgun shells and go shoot stuff in the desert, man. That was an actual normal way to pass time, you know, growing up. So, yeah, you get out here and you get to itching just to be outside and ride a four-wheeler or something.
Yeah, just the – what I always think about is like, oh, there's things that you can just – I thought were normal in small-town West Texas that are just like, you know, frowned upon other places.
Man, I got to college and I was like, you know, I didn't know anybody when I moved to Texas. I knew one girl at Baylor that she was older than I was, wasn't in my class or anything. So I just was – I was 600 miles from home and just trying to meet people. And you started kind of get meet people. And I did. And I was like, man, can we just go out on some land, you know, like just get out. And they're like, well, do you know anybody? I'm like, I don't know anybody. I just got here. And they're like, well, all the land in Texas is pretty much private. Like you can't just be driving out in some field that you see. Is that somebody owns that? They're going to shoot you or kick you off of it, you know? So, that was a big adjustment, but yeah, you grew up in these small, Eastern, Western New Mexico, West Texas towns. There's, I mean, jackrabbits, like,
yeah,
just hunting rabbits and stuff, you know. There's a lot of stuff that I'm so grateful I got to grow up, you know, with those experiences.
One of those things that I always love is, like, I love going camping. And, like, of course, you can go camping and it's the Big Bend and it's the state parks around and you just go camping there. But there's a different kind of camping when it's like someone's just land, like a buddy's place, and you just go out in the middle of nowhere.
Just raw land.
And it's
a
different kind of, oh, wait, there is no RV hookup, you know?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's just a different deal. And the further west you get, you know, once you cross 35 heading west, you know, and you kind of get out through the hill country. But once you're like 10 west past Junction, man, it just starts to get – it gets big and open and wild, and there's a lot of room to get lost and kind of do whatever you want. It gets a little bit lawless in a sense. You know?
I've been using this quote ever since I heard it the first time, and that's there's this Roy Orbison quote of like, there's a lot of ways to be lonely in West Texas. And you can take that in that way of lonesome and isolated kind of way, or in that lonesome in the, I can get away and just decompress. You know, there's a lot to that, to just like that thought right there. We've been kind of talking about some of the mythos of West Texas and like, what does it mean to come out here? And, you know, songwriters and artists have been trying to capture what West Texas is. And they've been inspired for, you know, since the beginning of dawn, essentially, right, as far as creation goes. For a lot of everyone that we've been talking to, or I've been talking with, you know, they're coming from it from an outside perspective. You, like me, been in this, like, and maybe there's like less, is there less magic? I'm not really sure, but I'm sure like you have to go, like you realize there's that magic a little bit more and appreciate it a little bit more once you, other people are telling you, no, this place is special.
It is. It's fun. It's fun to see it through the eyes of people,
that,
you know,
lens,
especially Drew, you know, he and I are so close and he's told the stories of, you know, him, you know, his reaction to coming out here. It's the same reaction I have going back east, you know, and being like, look at this city or look at these rivers or look at all this water, you know, like you can't help. And not even in a negative way. You take for granted where you're from, you know, right. It's just what you've always seen. But I do get it. I mean, there is just, it's a harsh climate, you know, I mean, you got to be smart about it. You know, in Las Cruces, it's 60 miles from everywhere. You know, you got to plan your gas stops out here. Like Christy was coming out and was like, or even we were driving out and it was like, are we going to stop for gas in Fort Stockton or can we make it a marathon? Because there's no choice if you don't. Like, your choice is make it to marathon or you're going to run out of gas. Because I just think all of those things inspire, especially artists who can tend to live in their own heads a lot, you know, and be sort of self-involved. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of the nature of the job. And you get out here and it's the feeling you have when you stand at the foot of the Rockies or you stand looking out at the Pacific or you stand in this massive desert and this massive sky and these huge clouds. It's just this perspective shift. It just sends you into this place of like, oh, it's like a cosmic ego check. And when all of that stuff starts lining up, I think inspiration can come or certain, you know, neurological pathways can kind of get unstuck that might have been kind of clogged up with the noise and the hustle and the bustle of you know, wherever you're from.
Yeah.
It just feels so open. It's just so wide open and so desolate that I feel like you just feel yourself decompressing and decluttering and you know, defragmenting or whatever to use computer terms. It can clear you out, clear your mind out in a really positive way. And I totally get it. And it's been awesome watching these, you know, especially, you know, Drew and other writers who have not grown up in an environment like this. But man, I was, like I said, I got to drive out into this stuff all growing up. You know, once we had cars, we'd get out in the desert and just tap into that, I think subconsciously, you know, but it feels very much like home.
Yeah.
Out here to me.
This is one of those things that you take for granted, but I guess it was probably about 15 years ago. I was reading an article in Texas Music Magazine about Marfa, about, you know, the blowing up of these bands going out there and playing, and how, like, why is Brent Daniel of Spoon playing out there, and why is Jeff Tweedy of Wilco playing out there? And there's this quote from Tweedy about he was either jogging or walking around the square in Marfa, and he had the realization that he could hear his own heartbeat. And he was like, I don't know the last time I heard my own heart beating, especially, you know, in the middle of a town outside. Like, there's always too much noise for even being aware of that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of took him aback. And it's one of those, like, man, like, that's, you know, goosebump inducing magic right there.
The moon shadow is a huge one for me. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're out here under a full moon, and I mean, it is so bright and you have a distinct shadow on the ground from moonlight, you know, like that. That's one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, this is magic out here. It is something.
Now, obviously, like a lot of people, early songs, you're always kind of writing about home, what you know, in a lot of senses. But for you, like, has there been anything that you specifically feel like I was trying to write about this slice of West Texas? Or was there anything that started out, like, in a place like Marathon that you either wrote out here or you ended up like finishing elsewhere, you know, or took trying to find that nugget from out here and then blossom into a song.
Yeah, it would be hard to point at something specific. Me and Drew wrote Open Road. Mm-hmm. And that started in San Angelo and kind of driving through West Texas. And it's about a westward journey.
Right.
Getting out here on these western highways. I have a song, Bobby Hamrick is here on this trip. And he and I, it was the first number one I had on the Texas charts, a song called Lone Star Highway. And it's got this line in there where you can ride all day and still be in Texas when I'm done, you know. And then those first verses are the twists and turns life's taken. You know, you can't see around the corner. And I realize East Texas is full of you can't see around the corner. It's all in the piney woods. But that's very much West Texas highway written, you know. It's just those mm-hmm. forever, forever and ever highways that you can see down and, you know, not curving up through the mountains. And, it again, all the reasons we're saying that there's something that feels so good about getting on a highway and not having a million billboards crashing in on you and trees and traffic, and it's just like, oh my god, it's just kind of me and the road out here, you know.
Right. So
Lone Star Highway for sure is colored tons by the experiences out here of missing home and wanting to get back. I got a record coming out in November. It's called Long Way from Las Cruces, man. And it's just about all the tricks and trials and places I've been since leaving my little desert home. So yeah, I think it all finds its way into the songs. A lot of times, you know.
Right. Yeah. Now, whenever you're like at home in New Braunfels or, you know, you're in Nashville and riding or whatever the case, and you're just kind of like wanting that, you know, hey, can I get transported back to West Texas? Is there like a song or a record that like just, you know, you're going to put on to teleport you back to a place like this?
Oh, man.
I mean, the list is probably forever long, but.
But a lot of it for me, because, you know, 90s country is, you know, having its moment again, and there's a younger generation finding it, and I think that's awesome, you know. But I was, you know, I graduated in 98, so like I was in high school getting my first truck, like in the peak of like the best of the 90s country stuff. And the straight box set, that first box set came out, whenever it was, 96 or 7.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I wore that thing out. I can hear George Strait Records, but I can hear the order. Like, I'll know. When I hear one song, I'll know what's coming next because it was what the box set order was of just all those mm-hmm. hits after hits. So, Straight automatically takes me back there because that was me, like I said, taking the truck out to the desert with buddies, driving out there with your sweetheart for a little
yeah.
moonlight, whatever, you know. So Straight for sure is a transporter out there. You know, getting to Texas, getting plugged into the underground stuff, you know, now the Lubbock scene, all learning about so much of that, because music to me before I got to Texas was top 40 radio and my dad's records, you know, the old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then getting plugged into Texas and realizing what an impact Lubbock and, you know, West Texas has yeah. had on Texas music in general. You can hear it obviously in those Terry Allen records and that Robert Earl Keen stuff and
yeah, you
know, all that 806 music.
Yeah. It's always like that. It's a light switch of like realizing like the songwriters of Texas are, you know, there is something happening that, you know, obviously us Texans are proud to be from Texas and, you know, you build up on that lore of like the Texas songwriter, the mythologizing of the songwriter from Texas. And, you know, it's like the snowball rolling down where it gets bigger and bigger. And of course, a lot of that was great and it is great. Yeah. And like, as far as the material goes and, yeah, rambling on here, but it is one of those things where once you find and it happens for people from Texas, that's the important part. When they realize like, oh, all these songwriters are incredible. We can listen to those people too.
Yeah.
And
a lot of those great Texas songwriters were very enamored with New Mexico and, you know, Red River's got its history and
yeah.
Taos and there's
yeah.
mysticism up in those mountains too.
What's that the, was great. Yeah. Oh, I'm blanking on it now. It just left me, but like Ray Wiley Hubbard's
oh, yeah.
band, that he had in Red River that was like
Three Faces West. Was
yeah, because yeah. It's like it's such a great name.
Oh yeah,
it's like
I mean, okay. Redneck Mother came from Red River and all that stuff. Like
yeah,
it's a close bond. You know, the West Texas and New Mexico connection yeah. is there's definitely a lot of overlap and a lot of
yeah
a lot of stuff that happened there.
I mean, you know, like that line. Just arbitrarily drawn, you know?
100%.
One of my favorite stupid jokes is like when we argue about where West Texas begins in Texas, where's that line at? My favorite stupid joke is to take the original Texas map
right.
and then just draw this is West Texas and it's like the New Mexico all the way up to Wyoming part.
Exactly.
Like, that's West. That's
no, 100%. And that, I always make that joke, the 1836, like Texas Tumbleweeds has that shirt of Texas yeah. and it's like, oh, I was born on the eastern side of the Rio Grande. So technically, if I'd been born in 1836, that would have been West Texas. But, oh, yeah, I mean, come on. Like, El Paso and Las Cruces and,
yeah,
you know, that's its own thing. And, I mean, that starts really here in Marathon to me. Like, you get Marathon, Fort Stockton, Van Horn, Sierra Blanca. Like, those all have a very southwest yeah. New Mexico tight. Like it's its own vibe for mm-hmm. sure. Even different, I think, than Lubbock and
oh no,
Angelo
definitely.
And Midland and all that stuff.
I think it's a lot of it has to do with like the landscape and like what ends up happening, what people are doing in these places, right? To do the simple version. Obviously, the Permian Basin oil field and like all the oil field
yeah.
creates a certain mood and temper for these people because there's so much fluctuation and there's so much like boom and bust
oh, yeah.
where in Lubbock, I feel even though there's some boom bust aspects to, and it's a lot of risk to be a cotton farmer out there, but like it's a little, like even just driving a tractor, there's a little bit more of a slower
yeah.
thing happening. Than
a little
like,
less wildcatty.
Yeah. Then you fucking drilling for oil, you
right,
know?
Right, yeah.
And so I think like it just, the temperament of people is different and it happens somewhere between Andrews and Seminole.
Yeah.
So, yeah. One of my favorite questions I've been asking everyone right now has been has there been like a teacher who you felt like, you know, looking back in hindsight going, oh, they actually kind of pushed me in this direction or they,
oh yeah,
you know, helped me out along the way.
Oh, 1,000%, man. The music teacher at my high school, the choir director, her name was Diane Schutz. And I was a reluctant singer. I started musically as playing the trumpet in middle school. And I got braces. And, man, it just hurt my lips so bad to play the trumpet. And this all, like, it's that perfect storm of, like, kind of, you know, puberty hitting and the switch flipping. And you start getting interested in girls. And I figured out I could kind of sing and I realized I could kind of use that to my advantage. And so anyway, get to high school and, you know, I was, my music elective was choir. And this man, our teacher, she took us, I went to, and these were choir trips or whatever, but we went to LA, we went to Washington, D.C., we went to Dallas, we went on like major trips in these buses. And I was in some smaller groups and she would have us out gigging. Like I learned how to gig in high school from this woman. Like, we got the Rotary Club. You know what? They're not major mm-hmm. gigs, but it's just like all that community stuff that you do. And my freshman year, I was reluctant, you know, but she saw it in me and she pushed me really hard and introduced me. You know, I was a freshman, but older kids, like, you know, they just, oh, you got to sing, you got to sing. And it was huge. And that was about then I started playing guitar and she encouraged that I could play guitar. And she was just so, I would just, absolutely, Diane Schutz is the most incredible music teacher. And she touched so many people's lives. There was, I mean, out of my high school class, like within 3 and 4 years, there was just this crop of kids, like some were famous opera singers, like right now singing in the Met in New York City and musical theater people. And one guy went off to be like a contemporary Christian artist, like running bands. And I did my country thing and It was pretty crazy, and the line to her was very strong, and man,
yeah,
unbelievable.
I think a lot of times when it comes to a voice like that, in those formidable years, it's the allowance to dream and to do something that there's always a hesitation to think like, is this possible? And like the allowance to just,
oh, and know. She was so, it was possible. once she assessed it, it's like, you got to be here. Like, the responsibility was ours, you know? Like, mm-hmm. we were running little PAs, like, if there had to be microphones. And I mean, she was teaching me how to do the road before I even really understood what I was learning. And I don't even know if she was consciously impacted. It's not like she thought we were going to leave and, like, hit the road. But
right.
I got to school, and, man, I was like, let's start a band. We need a PA. I know what we need. Like, I understood gigging on the very small scale, you know? And then getting to Texas and seeing Pat Green and these guys that are just starting to hit the afterburners there in the late 90s,
yeah,
driving vans and packing stuff in trailers. I'm like, oh, this is like what we were doing for Miss Schutz, except it's not, you know, whatever, her choiry kind of music. Like, I can do my song. I can write songs and do this. Like, I know how to do this. So there's not been a day from just the coordinating and all that stuff. Anything was possible with her. Absolutely anything. And you felt that. And she would empower you to do the same thing. Like, no, you know, this is what we're doing. And if you had that moment of self-doubt, it was like, no, there's no time for self-doubt. This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Figure it out. And she empowered us to do that. And we did. And it was, yeah, I have a Diane Schutz 100% all the way.
Yeah.
Full stop.
obviously, we are great partners with Desert Door, who's down here right now at Marathon. Do you have like a go-to cocktail? What's your favorite kind of?
Oh, I tell you what, man, I had never had ranch water till I got down here, you know, a few years ago.
There's a ranch water, and then there's a ranch water. Like, yeah,
100%. Oh, yeah, now it's all a thing in the can and stuff, but like that Buffalo Bar ranch water, like the OG, like that, woo, pretty great. That's a big time go-to. As we mentioned, I'm on a bit of a Chardonnay kick. I do enjoy wine. I like cooking good food, and I like trying to, you know, pair wines up and stuff with that. But cocktails, yeah, it's been tequila, and this Sotol they have is very good.
Yeah,
I mean, it's 100 proof. You gotta watch out, but it's for real.
Yeah, Josh, it's been great.
Oh, always good catching up, man. Yeah. Always good catching up. No scary.
This episode of New Slang is brought to you by the Blue Light Live here in Lubbock, Texas. Blue Light has long been the heart and soul of the Lubbock singer-songwriter scene and has been a home away from home for some of Texas, Americana, country, and rock and roll's finest over the years. Talk with 99.9% of the songwriters who have come out of Lubbock and the panhandle at large over the past 20 years, and they'll point to just how integral and necessary the Blue Light is. With live music and touring slowly but surely coming back, spots like the Blue Light are getting back to their usual ways as well. That means music every night of the week. Do you want to see that schedule? Well, I've got a few options for you. One, go to their socials and give them a follow. That is at Blue Light Live on Twitter, at The Blue Light Live on Instagram, and of course, by just searching The Blue Light Live on Facebook. They're consistently posting that week's lineup of shows, as well as those heavy hitters that ought to be on your calendar that are coming up on the horizon. Two, check out BlueLightLubbock.com as well. There they have the full schedule, the cover charges, time, any of those specials that may be happening. While there, go check out their merch page. They have a wide range of hats, koozies, hoodies, sweaters, beanies, jackets, and so much more. You can, of course, get all of your merch needs when you go see your favorite band take the stage at Blue Light. Just ask the bartender and they will get you all set. Speaking of which, that's another great way of seeing who's playing there. Just go to the Blue Light. It's at 1806 Buddy Holly Avenue here in Lubbock, Texas. And of course, again, that is BlueLightLubbock.com. I'll throw a link into the show notes too. Maybe I'll see you there. Okay, let's get back to the show. This episode is in part brought to you by Charlie Stout Photography. Charlie Stout has long been a great buddy of mine, and for as long as I've known him, he's always had a good eye for ideas, for lines in a song, and notably, an eye for what makes a great photograph. Yes, we're going to roll with that tried and true cliche about a great photographer having a good eye, but it's cliche for a reason. More often than not, it means it's true. Right now, I want y'all to head on over to charliestout.com to get an idea of what I'm talking about. While you're at it, go give them a follow on Instagram and Twitter at Charlie Stout. Right now, he has about 50 photographs for sale on charliestout.com, with a vast majority of those being landscapes and sky shots of West Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. The American Southwest, if you will. A lot of cacti and clouds, windmills and open roads, sunsets and stardust. He captures a lot of what I love about West Texas and these dry, arid climates. That's mainly that vast emptiness that can really make you feel small. The depth and the weight and the intensity, it's all in there. Right now, he's doing a special on his prints. Each week, he releases a new photo, and for 1 week only, that photograph is at a special introductory rate. For just $25, you'll get an 8.5x11. That's just about half off the regular price. For $75, you can get a 13x19, and for $110, you can get a 17x22. After the week, they go back to regular prices, which are still an absolute steal if you ask me. Also, just a pro tip, keep a watchful eye out on his Twitter. He's consistently posting one-offs, errors, and randoms on there that are for sale that are in the flash sale variety. Again, that is at Charlie Stout for Twitter and Instagram. Head on over to charliestout.com, grab a signed print, buy a record, get yourself some nature sounds and some nature shots. All right, let's get back to the episode. Sunday morning after the Marathon Songwriter Festival.
Yes.
Obviously, this place is so beautiful. West Texas, I'm from here. I love it. I feel like I could just go on forever about West Texas. But for someone like you who, you know, you're introduced to it much later in life than me as a newborn, essentially.
For sure.
Do you have like any favorite memories of coming out here and just hanging out or decompressing? And
I'm sorry, listener. My dog is basically sniffing around at his mixing board over here. There we go. And we're laying down. Okay. do I have any memories? Oh man, of course. So many, you know, I actually came out here, a few times during lockdown, just to kind of get away and get outside. There are a lot of special things about this part of Texas or of the world, but it's the air, you know? It's like, it's perfect air. I feel like I'm doing my lungs good when I'm down here in West Texas. It just seems clean and healthy. But I came down here a few times. First trip my mom and I took after, you know, being locked down for many months was down here to West Texas, which was her first time. Where I'm a Memphis girl, so I didn't come down to Big Bend and Marfa and Marathon area. Gosh, I don't know. I was like probably 37 or 8. So while my time here has been short, it's quickly become a really, really special place to get away from Austin and all the people and the, you know, unhealthy air quality.
Yeah. You say the air thing. It's like, obviously people have been bottling water, great water in other places forever. And like you sometimes you'll have that water and you're like, this is like the best water I've ever had.
It's the best air.
It's the best air. Yeah. And of course, like when you're driving in here and it opens up, you just like feel the openness. And I just love the, you know, just being able to see everything at once.
Yeah.
That's like some of my favorite parts of West Texas. And of course, like what we've been talking about with a lot of everyone who's been on here the last couple of days is, you know, the songwriters are always, you're kind of capturing some of that West Texas lore. When you come out here and think about, you know, just staying out here. Do you feel
all who've
like,
been here before us?
Huh?
All that have been here before us.
Yeah. Well, is there like anything that you point to, like from anyone else that you feel either, you know, captures a slice of West Texas or that if you want to take a West Texas moment that you just, I'm going to put that song on. I'm going to put that record on just to do a little bit of a, is there anything like that for you?
Yeah. Yes, I do. First of all, as far as a person that embodies West Texas, and that first person I think of when I think of West Texas is Butch Hancock, for sure. He lives down in Terlingua. And, I mean, God, is there a more West Texas guy, singer-songwriter.
Right.
There's a record when I was in a duo, Jed and Kelly, you know, we're from Memphis, and just starting to learn about music, Texas artists and music, and we met Butch, and I think it was just Butch that year at the Woody Guthrie Festival up in Okemah, Oklahoma, and quickly learned of the Flatlanders, and I think the first record that I ever heard of theirs was Now Again. Mm-hmm. It's I think 2000 maybe one or two is when it came out.
Yeah, and okay.
Will you go lay down? Jeez. And that record to me, whether I'm driving in Lubbock or the Panhandle, or I'm down here in west, way way far west Texas, that record is one that I always put on, and like you say, embodies the feel, the way it feels out here.
Butch, like, I love West Texas accents, and Butch may have like the top one because
for sure it
draws out in ways that like you don't expect. Like he'll draw out words that you don't expect when they come up, and he's always like the guy who I feel is so underrated from the Lubbock area, because he's kind of like he became so great at writing songs before Jimmy and Butch, or Jimmy and Joe, really. Of course, they were writing, but they were artists more so than the songwriter at 21. And they both have talked about how Butch was just prolific at such an early age of just capturing what West Texas was.
And absolutely.
That's such a great call as far as just the, and of course, like you said.
Has anyone else said Butch Hancock?
No.
Yes.
Let's see. We've had like Robert Earl Keen mentioned.
Yeah.
And like... some Terry and Guy,
sure,
stuff like that. But yeah, Butch is just...
Butch is far west,
yeah,
far southwest Texas.
And then also, for the listener, Butch, Jimmy, and Joe, there's episodes right before these, so go listen to them.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. When it comes for you as a songwriter, has there been a song that you've started out here that you've written or that you feel like you even tap into that world?
That's a good question. I think I knew you were going to ask me that, and I didn't think about that one. I don't think I've written any songs here. I haven't spent near as much time as you all, or probably all the other Texas songwriters that you spoke to this weekend. I mean, well, not Bobby and...
Yeah, but Drew, like, obviously.
For
like
sure, yeah. He's steeped into marathon. He's got marathon running through his... blood at this point. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a song that necessarily is. I have a lot of songs that are rooted in the South, mm-hmm. where I'm from, you know, in the other South.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I knew like you had a lot of songs that were rooted in that Memphis feel, that going back home.
But yeah.
You know, that's a, you know, that's the thing where, yeah, I wonder if like if people, because when me and Drew were talking, it was like him finding and discovering this place and like feeling like I had never been I didn't know this was on the map, essentially,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
And then kind of, you know, being taken aback by it. And, you know, I didn't know if like there was anything even in the, where you were like, well, this is actually technically from rooted in this area.
Right.
Or, you know.
Kind of my wide open spaces, I guess, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't written my wide open spaces yet. That's still yet to come.
Yeah.
But that does give me an idea, which is same as Drew, which is to come down here at some point by myself and, you know, stay here at the Gage or whatever, and maybe go camping for a few days and do some riding. Yeah. I haven't done that yet, and so maybe the next time you interview me, I'll have an answer for you.
Well, hopefully so, yeah. <one. laughs> Yeah, which you brought up Wide Open Spaces. Obviously, Susan Gibson wrote that, and you guys are buddies, Red River songwriters, all that stuff. You know, what have you done the asking Susan about that song, like, and trying to get like more of the specifics versus like
the
lore of it, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, when I first met her, cause I was probably trying to play it cool, of course, you know, but, I'm the Dixie Chicks era. So like I was huge.
Right.
I was in line at, you know, Tower Records the morning that the record came out, or Cats music is what we had in Memphis. But yeah, huge, huge, huge Dixie Chicks fan. And so it took me a little bit. You know, I wanted to get to know her a little bit before I really asked her all those questions. But but you know, she's an open book. That one, you know, she'll tell you whatever you want to know.
Yeah, she's I've talked to her a few times in interview form, and it's like, you know, you think, well, she wrote Wide Open Spaces, like, you know, she's going to have a little bit of an ego, and it's like, no, just obviously an incredible person. I've absolutely loved talking with her the times we have.
Yeah,
but
she's so funny too.
Yeah,
she's like secretly hilarious. You know,
yeah,
she's got these zingers and these one-liners that are pretty epic. Yeah.
One of the other questions that I've liked asking everyone recently,
yeah,
and I know I mentioned it to you before, was has there been like a teacher or anything like that who has been, that you felt like pushed you in a certain direction, but you know, has there been a teacher or just a person in the formidable years of your upbringing that you felt like kind of, when you look back now, you realize, oh, they kind of gently pushed
me into
the arts.
Well, I, as I was telling you before, like I didn't start writing songs until the Trishas. Mm. So I was always a singer first and foremost, and still I consider myself, you know, to be a singer first before anything else. I'm still a baby songwriter and a baby guitar player, but when I was young, my mom wanted to put me in piano lessons, as you do, and I believe I took, I don't know, maybe, you know, 6 or 7 lessons, and my piano teacher, Mrs. Lyons, I'll never forget her name, she took my mom aside and said, you know, I think Kelly is probably going to be a better singer than she is piano player. So, you know, I know you're a single mom and you can only put her into one extra thing. So you might want to consider singing, because when she sings along to the music and she's playing, she's got a really promising, you know, she could really be a great singer. So, you know, and not so much on the piano playing. So my mom was like, okay. And she asked me, you know, what would you rather do? And I was like, oh, easy. I'd way rather sing and take dance lessons than sit at this boring piano every week. And of course, in retrospect, like, so I did, I went and I ended up taking voice lessons for like 8 years, both group and individual. And, but it's funny, in hindsight, of course, I wish that I would have stayed in piano, because I would have been so much farther along as a musician if I had learned that theory, you know? But whatever, it's, you know, I appreciated anything she did for me as far as helping me, you know, to be an artist. But so I know this is going to sound cheesy or whatever, but truly, like, my teachers were the Trishas when it came to songwriting, because I didn't consider it. I didn't have any much interest in it until I got into that band with those girls, and they were writers and I wasn't. And we got offered a publishing deal, and basically it was like I had to write a song, you know, if I was going to pull my weight in that band, I had to start writing songs. So, so those girls were my teachers, and these Red River songwriters, Drew, Josh, and Walt were also, encouraged me, you know, to be better and write more and, lift me up. So I know that sounds a bit cheesy, but it's true.
Yeah. Well, I think it's one of the things I realized and have learned so much about when it comes to artists is it is that, like, that person or that collective group that,
yeah,
it sounds cheesy, like you said, but like that gives you the confidence, the allowance to, like,
yeah,
you can do this. Like, it's not just like cut off from, you're not cut off from this. You know, you're not just a singer. You can be more than that. And, you know, sometimes that's what it takes, is like to open yourself up to doing it.
That's true. Cause I have a really, really low, confidence in myself as a songwriter. I always have, just because I think I started writing songs around, you know, and performing, immediately, these songs. I didn't have those formative years of songwriting in your room, you know, when you just are doing that thing and you not have to really do it in front of anyone, I immediately started performing the songs I'd written in front of audiences and peer, you know, other songwriters that I looked up to and peers. And so it was like a crash course. And specifically Drew and Walt and Jamie Lynn really were like, you can do, it's great. You're great. You can do this.
Yeah.
You got it. You know?
Yeah.
Just deliver that song.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the, like I said, a key in the development of the art, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess it's always one of those constant things that, you know, always just being reassured,
right?
You know? And of course, like, we'll end it on this one right here.
Okay.
Desert Door has been out here.
Desert Door
is like a proud presenting partner of New Slang as well. So I love Desert Door. Do you have like a favorite kind of your go-to cocktail or a way that you like your door?
Well, they have the Sotol, right? Ooh, yeah, it's so good. A couple days ago, I guess first day of the festival, Walt Wilkins handed me a drink that he had kind of had them make up for him. And I basically drank that the whole weekend. And it is the Sotol. Sotol, is that how you say that?
Yeah.
It's, I always think like you're so tall.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And Topo Chico with a lime in there, of course, and a little bit of orange juice and a little bit of grapefruit juice, I believe is what he did.
Yeah.
So that was our little weekend Desert Door.
It's
refreshing.
To me, it's like,
yet smoky.
You feel classy drinking it, and you feel like, oh, this is like, I could just go camping and have it at the same time.
Yeah, that's right.
Or I could have like a suit and tie on and be like,
that's a good point. Like
because that smokiness, the little vanilla.
For sure.
Great.
Yeah.
But this weekend has been incredible. I've enjoyed being, hanging out with everyone, seeing everyone perform, these little podcasts right here.
Yeah.
It's been great talking with you this morning.
Yeah, you too. Sorry I was so late, getting in here.
Hey, we're on West Texas time.
That's
here,
right.
So it's
that's right. I woke up, had a sty in my eye, so I had to like ice my eye. We got here Wednesday a few days early just so we could kind of all hang out with each other and listen to each other's new music that everyone has coming out and stuff. So I moved in to my room. So it took me like 2 hours this morning to back up. But anyway, I appreciate you being here and highlighting the festival.
All right, that is it for this one. Be sure to check out our pals over at Desert Door, The Blue Light Live, and Charlie Stout Photography. Go order The Lubbock Way, visit the merch store, and subscribe to NewsLink. And I'll actually see y'all tomorrow, Friday, for another riveting episode of NewsLink.